Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second? Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Before we get started with this episode, if you haven't already, please subscribe, leave us a rating and review. It'll help us move up in the rankings and also help us to reach more people. So thank you in advance for supporting us in that way. Also, if you want to join the Bread Real Estate Investing community and start for your first week for just $1, you can click the link in the show notes below or go to blackrealestatedialogue.com. Very excited for this episode today. Here with me, I have Welby Aselli out of Long Island, New York. Very excited to dive into this interview. Welby, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Well, I appreciate you. I'm humbled that you would even ask me to be a part of your show. So thank you for that.
Definitely. No problem at all. So Welby, to start off, let the people know who you are and what you do.
Well, name is Welby Aselli. They call me at my best 197, ATMYBEST 197. On all social media platform. I'm known for flipping a lot of houses and utilizing those properties that I flip to then purchase rentals so I can have cash flow. And I've been educating or helping to educate our people as much as possible in the processes of what I actually do so that they can actually do it themselves.
Definitely. And appreciate you giving that introduction. Talk to us about, you know, what it was like growing up and what you saw or maybe what you didn't see that ultimately shaped your view of what it meant to build wealth by the time you were an adult.
Well, for me, I grew up initially, I'm one of five boys that my parents had. I'm also a twin. I have a twin brother as well. And we grew up in the projects of Canarsie Projects in Brooklyn. So we never went hungry, but we weren't rich or wealthy or anything like that. At certain points, we had upwards of maybe 11 people living in our three-bedroom apartment. And I had a godfather of mine that would often come in to visit us in the projects to come and, you know, see the family. Because, you know, that was my mother's cousin. And he was always nicely dressed. He always came with a nice car, well-groomed and everything. And what he would do is he would take me and my siblings, and sometimes my parents would take us to go to Long Island. Long Island is the suburbs of New York. And we would go visit him. And I was always intrigued by the fact that when we were in the projects, my parents were extremely overprotective. Good reason, I would say. And we were never allowed to arrive our bicycles anywhere else but the cul-de-sac of the projects. We couldn't go out into the street or anything else like that. But when I would go visit my godfather would give us bikes, and he would have me and my siblings and his children, my godbrothers and sisters, to go out and ride our bikes. But when we would ride the bikes, we were able to be free. We were able to ride in the middle of the street. And just the simple fact of being able to ride my bike in the middle of the street always blew my mind. And it wasn't until later on in life, when I got a bit older, is when I realized that my godfather was in real estate. He owned a handful of rentals. A seed of real estate implanted in my mind.
Amazing. So what was it? So definitely, you know, we could see that a seed was planted when you were a kid. So what was the road like to your first investment? You know, when was that point where it's like, you know what? I saw my godfather, you know, have this type of lifestyle. Now it's time for me to invest in real estate. Can you talk to us about that?
That happened. Well, fast forwarding, I purchased my first investment property in 2004. I think it was November of 2004 is when I purchased my first investment property. And I still live in New York, but I was living in Queens, New York. I was in my early 20s and I purchased a four-unit property in Stone Mountain, Georgia. So that's where I bought my first piece of property.
Got you. So, you know, right now the craze and people talk a lot about long distance investing. We have all this technology at our disposal. There are many things out there to help people make those investments if it's too expensive where they live. But you mentioned 2004, right? So this is like way before all this has happened right now, way before social media got the way it is now. What made you want to invest in Georgia from New York at that time?
Well, the biggest reason why I wanted to do that at the time is because I was following everybody, to be real with you. At the time, Georgia is still the place that a lot of our people, if I could use that word, goes. But Georgia at that period of time was like the mecca for African Americans to go to in 2004. Well, in that, around that period. And I had a lot of friends and family, friends and very close friends that ended up moving to Georgia. And because of that, I was even considering possibly moving to Georgia. So because of that, the price points was a bit cheaper than New York as well. So that also intrigued me to say, let me utilize my New York money in a smaller market. And then that's how I dived in at that point.
Got it. That makes sense. That makes sense. So that was back before there were like all these regulations on mortgages and stuff like that. Were you part of that wave where there weren't really that many qualifications and pretty much anybody with a pulse could get a house?
Well, you took the words out of my mouth. As long as you had a pulse, you was able to get a property. So when I purchased that property, I purchased that property with 106% financing. So for the people that don't know, in the cowboy days, this is when you literally didn't have to come out of pocket a dime. So they were financing the purchase of the property 100%. No money out of pocket. And then that extra 6% was to add to the mortgage for the closing costs. So when I walked in on that two family, I paid literally no money out of pocket when I purchased that property.
Wow. Game changing. So what was that experience like? So you bought the property, you own it. At that time, did you know what to do after that? Did you have any resources, any help? Like, okay, this is how you find a tenant. This is how you do all these things. Or was it kind of like, I'm going to buy it and we're just going to see what happens after that?
Here's what it is. Right, people are going to initially hear this conversation that we're having, and some of the people are going to be possibly listening to the initial conversation and then saying, oh wow, I want to do that too. Maybe be a, there's a level of jealousy, but what the image that people portray and to what the end results are many of the times is not the same. So when I acquired that property, I was doing like a lot of people were doing, including today. I read a handful of books, I studied a few acronyms like ARVs, LOEs, all those different acronyms. I read a handful of books, and I figured because I read a handful of books, I was ready to go. Not only that, I didn't have a mentor. I didn't have a big homie. I didn't have somebody that had experience and said, hey, Wubby, let me put you under my wing and let me help you to give you an easier path to the road of success in real estate. What I did is I read, like I said, a handful of books. I got a basic information that I thought that I knew, and I arrogantly went to go look at properties in a state that I know nothing about, that was an airplane flight away from me, figuring I'm going to go there and handle business. What happened is it was a disaster. Long term, it became a disaster. The biggest thing that happened is because when I acquired the property, I didn't understand acquisition. So if you would have asked me, why did you buy that particular property? I bought it because it's a four family. I didn't understand cash flow. So if you would have asked me, Wubby, what would have been your cash flow on that? I didn't know. I just bought it because I was qualified. Like a lot of the people that are doing today. That's why I tell people that this is what the cause of it might be a bit different, but the effects is going to be exactly the same. So I didn't understand the basic knowledge of what I need to do to acquire. So I just bought. And if you let me elaborate a little bit deeper.
Yeah, please.
When I bought the property, at the time for $220,000. Mm-hmm. When you compare that same four family in New York, it would have been maybe triple the price. So I thought I got a deal because I had New York money or big city money in a smaller market. So I didn't understand what I was doing. Mm-hmm. The realtor represented to me that this four unit property would be able to rent each apartment for upwards of $800 to $1,000 a month. I didn't know how to properly validate what she claimed to me or anything else like that. I took everything for the words that she told me. So if we make everything simple and we simplify everything, and it would have been the bare minimum of $800 a month, that meant that I would have projected making $3,200 a month. I'm a number guy when I talk, so
yeah,
I apologize.
Good.
So I projected $3,200 a month. Given the fact that I came with no money down, no money out of pocket, let's not forget now, since you're putting no money down, down. I had a PMI on my mortgage, right? Personal mortgage insurance on my mortgage. Obviously, the mortgage was going to be a bit higher. I had two mortgages because it was an 80-20, which would equate to the 100% plus the 6% that was financed. My mortgage and everything was just about $2,200. So given the fact that I'm supposedly supposed to generate $3,200 a month, by the time I paid the property manager the 10%, which would have been $320, by the time I paid the mortgage, I figure I would make around $500-$600. I thought it was decent today. Yes, that day, at that time, realizing today that would have been horrible. Long story short, the property, the best I was able to get for each apartment was $500 a month.
Wow.
So the mortgage, the best I was able to generate in total, if everybody pays and there's no major issues, was $2,000 a month. My mortgage is $2,200 a month. So I was already in the red $200. Let's not forget the property manager got to get their 10%. So the 10% comes out of the 2000, it's $1,800 a month is left. That meant I was coming out of pocket minimum $400 a month. We didn't even count maintenance, water bills and everything else. So I was already bleeding from the door.
Wow.
What ended up happening is that my employment was paying to supplement the difference. Then of course, being a landlord, you have your issues. Some of the tenants weren't paying, some of them were not. Issues with boilers breaking and roof leaking had to be taken care of. So long story short, I refinanced the property sometime around 2 years later. So that would have been around 2006, give or take. Refinancing increased my mortgage to from 220 to 240, which increased my mortgage payment, which decreased my cash flow, which meant it got worse. By 2000 and I had so much happen to me, so I don't remember. Somewhere around 2009 or so, somewhere around then, I ended up losing the property to foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I ended up losing it all. That it destroyed my credit, it destroyed my ego, it destroyed my pride. I was hurt. I went from a gentleman having 700 credit score to now having a 500 credit score with a foreclosure to my name.
Wow.
The buyers who bought the property or the investor that bought the property from me that I had a mortgage of $240,000 bought that property for $60,000 at auction.
Wow.
So those people who was able to buy that property for that price is who I am today. That's the way I view when I buy my properties today. But I didn't understand the proper approach on looking for a property, understanding how much I should be paying for a property, understanding that if the numbers don't work for me to walk away, like the way the people are doing today. Yeah. So I tell everybody, the pain is coming. The pain is coming soon. I can't tell you when. I just hope that you're prepared for it.
Definitely, definitely. I appreciate the transparency, right? Because, you know, on the internet, it's the highlight reel. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's everyone talking about the wins, but I think it's so important, especially during these interviews, to talk about the beginnings, because the beginnings for everybody didn't knock it out the park on their first deal. Just as you mentioned, you know, what you learned, especially from the investor who bought the property for a fraction of the price, it sets you up for a lot of the strategies you use today, which we'll definitely get into. So I appreciate you sharing that.
But if I could add to that, that's not what happened, though.
Mm-hmm.
When I lost it all. I ran back with my tail between my legs,
mm-hmm.
right? Lost it all. In between that period of time, I was doing other things because I've always been a hustler.
Yeah.
And then I jumped back into real estate again. And it's a whole bunch that happened and we probably could get into it, but I ended up losing it, wiped out, losing it all upwards of 2 to 3 times before I started grasping it and understanding. So yes, like you said, it is a highlight reel. I'm one of the few, if not the only one, that brags about his losses. The millions that I make today didn't come overnight. I went through hell and back to be where I'm at today. So I'm proud of what I went through so I can hopefully inspire other people to be like, if this first generation Haitian American guy can go through all the hell that he's been through and then some and still maneuver and find a way to keep fighting to get and achieve his goals, there's absolutely no reason why I can't do it as well.
Love it. Love it. So you mentioned that there was a lot that happened before you got back into real estate again. So I guess considering what you went through during that period of time, I guess you could tell us some of what that was and ultimately what gave you the courage to jump back in the game again.
Well, sometime not too long after that, all of this is what I'm saying is documented. So anybody want to go and research, they could go check it out, right? I'm called Mr. Receipts because I could back up anything and everything I tell. Anything I show, I got the receipts for it. But I had so much going on. So like I said, apologize about the timelines. But not too long after that, I I had a tire shop that failed. I also owned, I had bought into a nursing home agency for a short period of time, and my partner robbed me and ran off with the money.
Wow.
Then I'll tell all of your listeners, go and Google search G-O-O-C-E-A-N, Go Ocean, like the water, Go Ocean Water Park Scam. And what you're going to find was is a federally investigated Ponzi scheme, if you want to call it, if we could call it that, where I owned 40% of a project that my partner, her name is Liliana Traficante. Google it. And basically, my partner at the time embezzled over $6 million in a project that we were building for a water park in Goshen, New York. So Goshen, New York is G-O-S-H-E-N, but the play was Go Ocean Water Park. So if you Google search Go Ocean Water Park Scam, and if you do your research, you're going to see the victims. And if you read the victims, they labeled us with numbers, and you're going to see victim number four. Victim number four was me. So I was being investigated by the federal government, the FBI. They were following me and a multitude of other investors. They tapped our phone because they were investigating what was going on, because there were other investors that we knew nothing about that were being lied to and were manipulated into sending hundreds of thousands of dollars by our partner, and they wanted to see what involvement that we had. So basically, the FBI came one day knocking on my door, and they came to question me, and I was terrified because I was wondering what they came to question me about. I thought it was maybe some other things I wasn't aware of, and leading with the questions that they were asking me, then I started realizing that they were asking me about Liliana Traficante. Then basically, at that time, I had a $425,000 wire in Chase Bank that was being held, and we could not figure out why it was not being released. And the investigator then told me it's not being released because they were holding it because they've intercepted the wire. And then this is when it started snowballing into the fact that when I'm realizing now that my partner stole all this money, that a lot of the money that I had in it, I'm basically going to lose it. They discovered that I didn't have any involvement with it. So obviously I've never been arrested. I didn't have any legal issues in terms of that. She ended up pleading guilty, serving 5 years in federal prison for what she did to me and multiple other people. And then she was ordered to pay restitution to me and other people. And how many years later, I don't even think I got $20 back from that whole situation.
Wow. Man, so, you know, considering all that, all the ventures and the unfortunate scam situations, you know, take us to that moment where, you were in a position and you're like, you decided to give real estate another try.
I decided to give real estate another try sometime around, maybe it was 2013, I decided to give it another try. Mind you, don't forget, at this period of time, I'm still employed. Mm-hmm. And in my employment, I was gainfully employed. I made good money with what I was doing. So I've always been disciplined enough to realize that instead of me focusing on other people to invest in me, I decided to invest in myself. So what I tell people today, stop looking for an investor or looking for, quote unquote, a handout. You got a job, right? You making money, right? You eating, right? You eat every day. You get to go away on a trip every so often, right? Your first investor is your employment. So you need to put it in your mind to sacrifice and utilize your employment money to become your first investor to whatever degree that you can do it. Because of course, you're going to hear people make excuses about whatever it is that they have bills or whatever crap. We could all make the excuses that we want. But the fact is that you have to make a sacrifice, period. And if you're not willing to do it, just accept what your life is giving. I decided to reinvest again in sometime around 13. And I decided to go back to Atlanta again and reinvest again. Don't mind you, in between that period of time, I was doing real estate in New York and in other areas. I was finding some level of success, but I'll be honest with you, it was all luck. I really didn't know what I was doing. It was just like today, everybody looks like a star today because the market is going up. And then you could throw it on the wall and somebody's going to stick and buy the piece of crap that you have. That's what I was doing. So I made me a little bit of money and I took that money and I went back to Atlanta to reinvest again. Sometime around, like I said, 13 or 14.
Mm-hmm.
When I went back there again, I went there to do a flip.
Yeah.
I purchased the property and it was in Duluth, Georgia, when I bought it. 2726 Cardinal Lake Drive, if I can remember it correctly, in Duluth, Georgia. Anyways, I went and I bought the property, and here it is. I knew enough at this period of time to know how to properly acquire the property, meaning I knew that I needed to buy this property at this price point for it to make sense for it to be a flip. And I was able to roughly figure out what the rehab cost was going to be. So I was able to acquire the property right. Mm-hmm. I then thought that I did the right thing in finding a contractor, but I didn't understand how to properly manage a contractor and properly protect myself through a contractor. Now, imagine now you're doing business out of state, 3-hour flight away, have to get a rental car to come and look and see what's going on with your project, trying to manage. And now I hire a contractor that's supposedly doing work in the property, telling me that all these things are being done. And you already know, photos lie to you. So when they were sending me pictures, the pictures looked amazing about what's going on with the property. Not until I then went finally a month later to see what's going on with the property, and the work was trash. So the $30,000 that I ended up spending at that period of time was basically a waste of time. There was no recourse for me to be able to get this person unless I was going to sue him. And even if I sue him, if you're in real estate, you understand time is ticking. You got to get this property on the market. So I ended up having to eat that $30,000, find me another contractor. The property was on the market forever, trying to get rid of it. I finally found somebody that was willing to buy the property. All they did is smell water, blood in the water, throw me a lowball offer on the property, and squeezed my, excuse my language, because they knew I had to take it to bail that out. I ended up doing that, and I ended up losing a whole bunch of money. When I ended up losing a whole bunch of money, I was given a check for $90,000.
Do you really think investing in real estate is too expensive? Well, you wrong about that. Presenting a beginner's guide to buying your first out-of-state property, a Black Real Estate Dialogue course. That's right, it's the new course presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue, teaching you how to develop the investor's mindset, the advantages of investing out of state, getting your finances in order, finding the right location, assembling your team, creating financing strategies, how to find and analyze properties, how to find tenants, real-life case studies, and so much more in bonus content. Oh yeah, did we mention you have lifetime access? My goodness. If you have dreams of buying a property out of state but have no idea where to start, well, this is the guide for you. Learn the tips from someone with firsthand experience. Are you looking for a community of like-minded individuals and access to experts in real estate? Are you interested in real estate but need more support and guidance? The Black Real Estate Dialogue presents the Real Estate Investing Community. No matter how much or how little real estate experience you have, we've created a community for you because your perspective is important. All right, tell me, where's the number one place where you can do Q&A with experienced guest speakers 2 times per month? How about unlimited access to past guest speakers' recordings? What about a private Slack channel to engage in daily discussion with everybody in the community to share resources and support each other? Head on over to blackrealestatedialogue.com. That's blackrealestatedialogue.com. It's the real estate investing community presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue. Come join us today.
When I got the check for $90,000, an epiphany hit me. And one thing that I said to myself was that you keep skipping the process. That we all want instant gratification, like the people want today, like what you said earlier about people seeing the end results and the pull-ups. We want instant gratification, and that was me. I wanted the instant gratification. And I had to have a real conversation with myself. And I had to accept the fact that the reason why I kept failing was because, one, I kept betting on other people versus betting on myself. And two, I kept skipping the process, and I had to keep it real with myself about that fact. When I got the check for the $90,000, I had a friend of mine, prior to the sale of the property, said to me, "Hey, Wubby, you ever thought about going to Connecticut?" Even with this $90,000 that I got, and I fast forwarded a lot of this that I went through, just because it's a lot.
No worries.
With that $90,000 that I got, I was more confident ever in my life than I was more confident than I ever was, even with taking that loss. And I got my $90,000 because I admitted to myself where my shortcomings were. And it was, like I said, betting on other people and skipping process. So you Haitian, right?
Yep.
So you'll understand what I'm going to say. I come home. I mean, I wasn't living at home, but I come back home and my father asked me, what happened? And I told my father, "Yo, I lost, man. I lost. I got 90,000, man. That's it." So my father says to me, "Okay, Wubby, you fini avec ça? Yo, Wubby, you finished with this in our Creole language? You done with this, right? You're done."
Yeah.
And I told my father, "Nah, got it. And he's like, yo, you crazy. In Creole, you crazy. What you mean you got it? You lost. And I said, yo, dad, I got it, man. I'm ready. I took that $90,000. I know I didn't want to do business in New York in that way. I have to be real with myself about that. Remember, I got punched in the face a bunch of times. I lost hundreds and hundreds, even millions of dollars. F***ing up, bro. I'll be real with you. I'm f***ing up. When I decided to go out there, I said, let me go and go test the market. Let me go and understand this market. So before I spent the money, I went out there, and I live in the tri-state area. In all my years on this planet, I have never been to Connecticut, not once. And I said, you know what, man? I'm not going to skip the process, and I'm going to do my homework, and I'm going to do my due diligence. I started building up my team. My first team members was my friend and his father. They invited me to go over there. I did what rappers would call checking in. Mm-hmm. I humbled myself. I don't know this neighborhood. Let me go with these people that do know. I'm not going to act like I'm a Mr. Know-it-all. Let me humble myself and let them educate me and walk me through, even though they didn't have as much experiences as me as a fuck. They took me around the area, and for months, I started doing recognizance, if I'm saying mm-hmm. the right word. Started checking the market, started understanding the area. Connecticut, like New York, has a spectrum. You want to find you a $90,000 property? Depending on where you'll find it. You want to find $1 million property? You depend on where you'll find it. So I had to accept what price point I can truly play in, mm-hmm. which is why I have an online course, and I talk to the people about this in my online course. I give them the play-by-play. If you do not know how much you can afford, you're going to be just running around in circles, looking at everything that you're looking at, don't even know what the fuck you can afford. I had to investigate what I can afford. When I realized what I can afford, which was what is important, I realized what I can afford, and I was laser focused in that area, and I stayed focused in that area. And then started doing my, building up my team, meeting up with realtors. I started interviewing realtors and telling realtors the process of how I need them to work with me. And my attitude was, is either you with me or you not. If you're not with me, get the away from me. And that's how I was treating with respect. Mm-hmm. That's how I started treating everybody that started putting on my team. Realtor, attorneys, mortgage people, hard money lenders, contractors, everything. My contractor was only a father and a son. So I stayed within my experience level and was looking for the type of property that I can handle. So today we call those properties lipstick properties. Lipstick, you just mm-hmm. need to clean them up, paint them, make them beautified. You're not looking to do, you know, a whole rebuild. Mm-hmm. And I went there, and it took me several months, God knows how many offers. I finally got my one offer accepted. When I got my one offer accepted, I knew I acquired the property correctly. I knew I got it at the right price. I figured what the rehab cost was going to be, and I fought hard to stick on budget. When I fought hard to stick on budget, the property took us longer than we planned, but it took me about 4 or 5 months to get the property done, mm-hmm. put it on the market. When I put it on the market, the property sold. I made my first $25,000 strategically. Boy, let me tell you something, bro. I went home and I cried like a baby, bro.
Wow.
I was so proud of, I get choked up saying it now. Yeah. I was so proud of myself. I don't give a fuck what anybody think about me. I care how I feel about myself. I was down and I was out. I was so proud of myself. I proved that I could do it. Even though it was only $25,000, bro, I proved that I can do it. And I did it. I'm ready to go again. Let's do it again. And I followed the same process again. And I did it again. And maybe that 1 year, I did 2 houses. Each house profited me. The first one profited me $25,000. The next one profited me maybe about $50,000. So in 1 year, with all the offers I made over $70,000, which is what the average American, male American, is making, not even $40,000 a year. I doubled that. I proved it to myself. What ended up happening, I just started building up with the guys, and I had to pull myself out of certain things I was doing in the field to focus on building up the company. And then I pulled the father and or the son into my position, and I helped to train him to build up his company. Yo, you right. got to get more people. I'm going to get us to work, but you got to get us more people. And then it went from doing 1 or 2 houses a year to next 4 houses a year to then today I started averaging over 20 houses a year.
Wow.
This year I'm slated to do 40 to 50 houses a year.
Wow.
Right. So the thing is that it started with the hell I went through in 2004 to not giving up, accepting the fact I didn't have a big home. Everything I'm talking to you right now about, I could spin your head with it. It's self-taught, self-taught. I didn't have nobody to school me. All I had was people that viewed me as a sucker and they took advantage of me. I brag about that all the time. I was abused. I was taken advantage of. I was played. I was lied to. It made me the animal I am today. They don't try that shit with me today because I don't tolerate that. So that's why with the people that I rock out with, somebody that I care about. If you my friend, if you a family member of mine and I don't talk to you about real estate, it's because I don't give about you. I have to talk to you about real estate and express to you the importance of it and why you should care.
Yeah.
Why you should care. Not care about the level of what the next person is doing, including myself or not. My lane is different from everybody else's lane. Not better. My lane is not better than yours or not. Your lane might be to build an empire with 2,000 apartments. I don't know. My lane might be just to have what I got. I don't know. But you have to be strong and confident in your lane and be I don't want to say be satisfied, but know your lane and embrace it and mm-hmm. be what you want it to be. So I'm passionate about it. So like I said, if I don't speak to you about real estate because I don't like you like that or I don't care about you like that because it is that important, you know?
Definitely, man. That's amazing. So you definitely have scaled flipping to a great place. And you mentioned earlier that you also do some buy and hold. So can you talk to us about just transitioning into adding some buy and hold to your properties as well, to your portfolio as well?
I know a lot of people like to brag about the number of doors that they have. I have a lot, thank yeah. God. I have a lot, but I don't brag about that mm-hmm. because it's a misrepresentation of the performance. So you have a lot of people that will have hundreds of doors, but they'll maybe making $75, $100 per door, but they have 500 doors. Whereas I have people of mine that don't even have close to that, and it's quadruple in the profits that these other people are making. Right. So for everybody that's watching this, right, it's not about the size, it's about the performance, all right, of your portfolios. Not the size, it's the performance.
Right.
So when I started doing my flips, I love flipping. I love the challenge and I love the money. I tell everybody that's the new drug game, if you know what the hell you're doing, and it's legal. Mm-hmm. But I work so hard and you average it. If I'm averaging at that time 75,000 plus and I'm doing 20 of them, you could do my net profits. This is net. If you want to do gross, I'm doing millions a year. Today my average is in the six figures. I'm closing in on my 30 something this year so far. I'm going to be doing at least 40 of them. So you do the math. I'll leave it like that. But you're only as good as the last flip that you do. Meaning mm-hmm. you can make 100,000 each time, but then you got to do another property to bring the next 100,000 in and the next 100,000 in. And then let's just say you get a dry spell or not. You only as good as the last flip that you did.
Right.
The long-term play for any true investor in this game is passive income. It's a marathon. It's not a race. So for the people that think that passive income and, oh, I'm going to just build this up in a year, in a year or so. Well, I did do a lot fast. So don't misunderstand, but I prepped myself to be ready to do it. But for the people that think that it's just an overnight thing, it takes time. So, okay, I'm doing a bunch of flips, making a bunch of money. But my play was, I'm going to do what a blitz. I'm going to have so much money. I had over seven figures of liquid money and I'm going to go ham. So what I started doing now is I had the cash at the time, and then I started focusing on now utilizing these monies as down payments to buy my rentals.
Right.
I didn't live off of the money I was generating. I was making good money. I took a little bit for myself. I live a good life, don't get me wrong. But my goal was the profits that I'm making, I'm gonna treat myself a little bit with it, but the bulk of the money is gonna be reinvested back into the business. Because I gotta get myself to a point that I'm generating a considerable amount of money, right? Passive. So what I ended up doing is I flip. I built up over seven figures in liquid money. And then I said, I'm going to blitz. But before I did a blitz, I had to identify the environments I wanted to invest in. I didn't just go crazy like I did in the past and like other people are doing. I didn't just buy just to buy, just to say I bought. Mm-hmm. I was strategic on my purchase. So I don't want to mention the towns, because one of the towns I'm investing in, there's an influx of our people there. And I promoted it so heavy now. A lot of us is over there now. You know what I'm saying? So I'm in a bunch of different towns now, but I try to keep it easy because I don't want to cut my throat, right? So what I ended up doing is, is before I started investing, I said, let me understand the market that I'm in. So I started doing another recognizance, hanging out, chilling, going to the corner stores, buying some soda in the corner store, eating the empanadas, going to the barber shops, acting like I'm going to get a haircut so I can sit down and get the vibe of the neighborhood so I can see where my properties are going to be at. Once I started getting that and getting a comfort level is when I decided I'm going to focus here. Okay, I'm going to focus here. I'm going to be laser focused in this area. Most of us don't have the stamina. You're going to put one offer, two offer, five offers and get burnt out. In my flips, in my rentals, especially at the peak, I was doing 10, 15 offers a week, sometimes the same a day, so I can get that one deal, right? I talk about that in my online course as well. I break that whole play down on how to do that too. Started strategically looking. Finally, I got one of my first properties. There was a 4-unit property. I bought the property as a distressed property and I was putting 20% down. I wasn't doing some of the strategies that are promoted today, where if you continue it long term, you're actually going to over leverage yourself. I didn't want to have what happened to me in 2008 when I lost my 4 family because I was over leveraged. That was not going to happen to me again. Mm-hmm. So here I am. I bought a new 4 family. When I bought my new 4 family, I knew I acquired the property correctly. I didn't let no realtor manipulate me. I didn't let no realtor play me. I told them where we needed to be. Either we're going to make it work or not. We were able to make it work. I put 20% down because remember, the goal and the play for all those years of me saving up money is for me to purposely do something with it. Right.
Right.
Took that money and I put 20% down. That eliminated my PMI. That eliminated me having it helped me to have the best interest rates possible. At that time, it was a 5% interest rate. My mortgage at this time was only $1,178. Taxes, insurance, if you want to round it off to $1,200, maintenance, everything, I'd be all in for $1,200. So let me show you how I fucked it up. First floor, when I was done with the apartment, I got $1,300 for the first floor. So I was already up $100. Second floor, I got $1,100. Third floor, I got $1,275. Fourth floor, I got $1,100. So that particular property, which I still own today, is producing me just about $3,400, $3,500 in net income a month. Mm-hmm. So when the people ask today, how are you doing with this pandemic? Man, I'm chilling. That's what I'm doing. I'm chilling. I started building up relationships with the city, started building up relationships with social workers there. So I started housing people that have issues, less desirables, and people that maybe have hard times, people that are on Section 8, people are under different programs. So a lot of my properties that I rent to are people that are on programs. But good people, clean people, respectful people, but they need a chance and they want to live in a nice place. My apartments are on par with what my flips are. So my apartments are beautifully renovated and I get top dollar for them. And that was what I did with that. And then I multiplied that time multiple times over and over again.
Love it. Love it, man. And something else I wanted to make sure we talked about is you've recently gone viral due to a video you made, and I watched the whole thing, about a tenant who wasn't paying rent for 2 years, but on her last day, you helped her out. And you did something that's very rare. So I won't tell the whole story. I'll let you tell it. But can you talk to us more about that? You know, everybody who's listening probably has seen the video, but can you just take us to that moment and talk to us more about why you decided to do more than you had to do for this particular tenant?
Well, ironically, the 4 family I just described to you is the same place that this tenant was living in.
Oh, wow.
Ironically.
Yeah.
That tenant, when I acquired the property, was being evicted from that building. And I normally buy my properties vacant. I want them vacant so I could get in and do my thing. When I first met the woman, she's a Black woman. She's close enough to be my mother's age. All I saw was a scared human being. So then I told her, don't worry, you don't have to move. You can stay. I'm going to renovate this entire building. While I'm renovating this entire building, before I get to this apartment, you don't have to pay me any rent. I renovated the entire building beautifully. Then I moved her because the building was a home. Not anymore. It's a gorgeous building. I moved her into a brand new apartment I fully renovated, then renovated her apartment. And then she said she was to start paying me rent. She paid me rent periodically here and there, whatever like that. And then all of a sudden, I had the building for a few years. And then all of a sudden, a couple of years ago, she started having issues with paying rent. I would work with her. And it's not like it's just her. I don't want to make it like I single her. I've had other tenants that have had issues. I've helped a bunch of my tenants out. I do it all the time. It just happened to me that this video went viral. I really re-recorded it to protect myself. What ended up happening now, she stopped paying me for about a year, and then the pandemic happened. So, of course, like many people, she abused it of the pandemic and decides not to pay me and then made clear that I couldn't evict her because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I warned her during the period of time, since you're screwing me, I'm kicking you out. I'm putting you out when this is all said and done. I hope you're saving your money during this period of time that when you get put out, you're going to have a place to go or do something. Like a lot of the people today, they think it's a free-for-all. I guess she didn't take it serious. Then not too long ago, they had lifted the moratorium. Mm-hmm. She was also an extreme case of non-payment. So I was able to legally be able to evict her. So when the legal eviction was allowed, that day for the video that went viral, I was going there with about four of my employees with a dumpster to put her ass out and all her stuff out and get the hell out of here. That was what was going to be happening that day. When I went there, which we didn't catch in the video, is all I saw was a terrified woman. I mean, she was terrified, trembling. Is when I told the guys, listen, fellas, we'll do this another day. Don't worry about it. They left. I didn't want them to see what I was going to do. I went back, knocked on her door, and that's when her and I had the conversation. She accepted the fact she had to leave. Once again, like I said, she's terrified. She didn't have no place to go. Is when I said, listen, let me help you to put your stuff in storage. So what you guys didn't see is I put a bunch of her stuff in my vehicle. She put her stuff in the vehicle. We moved the stuff to storage. When we finished doing that, I did that all with my bare hands along with her. I guess she expected it was going to be over, and that was that. I got the keys to the apartment. It's over. I said, do me one better. Follow me. I want to show you something. She follows me, and when she followed me is when we went to the hotel. When we went to the hotel, I saw, once again, a terrified woman. I'm blessed. That same building, despite the fact she hasn't been paying me rent, was cash flowing, which make this a learning lesson for people. I don't buy it over leverage. So even with her not paying me, I was still making a very nice return on my money. I was able to absorb it. But everybody, at one point or another, your time is going to run out, which hers did. But that I didn't have to be heartless enough to just throw her to the wolves. So I put her in a hotel. I paid for her hotel for 3 weeks, and I gave her several hundred dollars for her pocket. Not to mention, since then, which I never recorded, I gave her at least another $1,000 since then. But then, of course, there are certain things that popped up, which I don't want to throw no dirt on her, which is cool. But she's out my apartment. I did what I felt that I should do. I'm very happy with my decision. I did it because I felt it was the right thing to do. And I got the apartment back. I'm redoing it now, and I'll have a new tenant in that apartment.
Definitely. Much respect to you for that. And I think, you know, just looking at the comments and things of that on that post, I think it's just really just an encouragement for people to see, because real estate investors in some cases get a really bad name. You know, a lot of people think real estate investors are greedy, are these money hungry people. And so I think for a lot of people, it's good to see a kind gesture that you didn't have to do. If you just kind of like, all right, this is it, like your stuff is out, whatever, that would have been fine. But I think it's nice to see someone kind of go above and beyond and show that, hey, it's not always just about money. Sometimes it's just about doing what you feel is right for a person in that time, even if, you know, they didn't do the same for you. So definitely, you know, much respect to you for doing that.
Appreciate that.
Definitely. So, man, what does the future look like? You know, you got the buy and holds running. You got the flipping business going well. What does the future look like for you and for your company?
I mean, we're just gonna keep doing what we're doing. Like I said before, I'm whatever is in my path, I'm ready for it. But I know people expecting me to say, listen, man, I want to start building skyscrapers. I don't care about that, bro. Only have one life. We only have one life. My goal is to hopefully live the best life I possibly can. It feels good to offer my mother whatever the hell she wants. You know, it feels good for me to basically offer myself whatever the hell I want and my loved one, and I'm just ready for whatever, man. If it's going to be that this is where it is, bro, I'm content, you know, and I'm going to make it the best. But if it's more, I'm ready for it. And of course, we're going to continue flipping houses. I want to continue buying my rental portfolio. I want to continue helping people and educate people in this business. I'm online now as far as the online course. I got the hottest online course out here right now.
Tell us about it.
The online course that I have, well, actually, I have have a book called My Ultimate Guide to Finding Houses to Flip for Profit is my book. Then the book comes in hard copy form, audiobook form, and an ebook form. And then what I did is I created an online course that's an extension of it where I dive into it heavy. It's about 4 hours worth of content, and I dive into it so deep. It's unreal, man. Unreal. And basically, the purpose of the book and the online course is that it is imperative that you understand as a new investor or even a novice investor, you make your money on the buy, on the purchase. And we're not understanding that. And we're buying based off of emotion or based off of because someone else, i.e. your realtor or the wholesaler or somebody else told you to. You need to understand why you're acquiring this property. If you can understand why you're acquiring the property, you can then break down what your other costs are to make sure that you're acquiring it correctly. If you're not acquiring your flip correctly, you're setting yourself up for a failure. If you're not acquiring your rental correctly, you're setting yourself up for a failure. So this course is the perfect guide for a beginner and a novice investor that's completely lost, that don't understand. This is going to give you clear directive as to what to do. And here's what makes it so beautiful. It's exactly what I do every single day. There's nothing in that course as difficult or as much work as you're expected to have to do is what I do every single day. So if I'm willing to do it every single day to then build myself up from what I described at the beginning of this interview to today, to be where I'm at today, and you're not willing to do it, I'm not the one for you to be listening to, man. But if you are, get this online course.
Definitely. We definitely have that link in the show notes. Another question I wanted to ask you, you talking about buying correctly reminded me of it. You had a video about a property that I believe you made an offer on, and then you backed out, and then someone else paid significantly more for it.
$20,000 more.
Yeah. And so it just goes to the point of buying correctly. So can you talk more about that? So there's a couple of things you said. You mentioned buying correctly. You mentioned people buying just to buy, buying off of emotion. So can you just really talk a little bit more about the importance of that? Because a lot of people are out here just getting bad deals, quite frankly.
I could simplify it for, let's say, a multi-unit. Mm-hmm. So that particular property that you're talking about, I had gotten it under contract for $150,000. If everything would have worked fine in what I was projecting it to be, with me putting the down payment I was going to be buying, like I said, I normally try to put 20-25% down. That's my strategy. And I could break down how you could get the money up to do it as well. But anyways, I projected that my mortgage by me purchasing it at this price point would have been roughly $1,000. But since it's a three family, I know without a doubt, because I know the area, because I got a bunch of rentals in the area, if the property would be what I was projecting it to be, I was going to get no less than $1,100 per apartment. So $1,100 times three is $3,300, but with a mortgage of $1,000. So I would have made $2,300 average net profit per month. It's a no-brainer, right? When I did finally go to look at the property and go and inspect the property, the condition of the property was misrepresented. What needed to be done to the property was way out of a budget for where I needed to be. So I tried to renegotiate. So I then offered the seller literally maybe $110,000 because it needed that much more work. I was willing to do no more than $120,000. We weren't able to work it out. I walked away. When I walked away, I felt good about it because I knew that if I did anything more than that, I was setting myself up for failure. The sad part about it is that the person that bought this property is a new investor. So when I posted up about that, I didn't show the property because I wasn't trying to show anybody's business, but this new investor paid $20,000 above what I initially offered. Whereas if you remember, I was trying to renegotiate it to $125,000. So technically this person paid, how much is that more? $125,000? Well, my math is bad, but he paid not $20,000 more. He paid over $50,000 more than he should have paid if he would have reasonable experience. So now imagine this. Now this same investor that bought it wasn't putting 20% down. He was putting what they train people to do with the Burr strategy of 3.5% down, maybe 5% down. His mortgage on the same particular property was going to now increase to over $1,600 a month. That's not even counting PMI, right? The work that needed to get done to that property was astronomical. He doesn't have the resources I got, so the average he would be getting for his apartments without without a question, would be between $800 to $900 a month. So let's be conservative and tell $900 a month. That's $2,700 a month on a property that he's going to have a mortgage of what I described that it was going to be, not counting the rehab costs and everything. So for him, he's ecstatic because he got it, but he's not realizing what he did. And a lot of people that were in the comment section were saying, oh, what if he was doing and giving up different scenarios? That's irrelevant to the right. point of that. If you are a true investor, as you claim that you want to be, some things you understand and know that you have to walk away from, some things you don't force. And that was the scenario with that situation.
Definitely, definitely. Appreciate you diving into that. And I mean, definitely a lot of game and tips within that for people. So hopefully y'all are listening. Make sure you're buying correctly and make sure you definitely get Welby's course that's going to be available for you in the show notes. Man, Welby, this has been just a great interview. What I keep thinking about is 2004, when you pretty much blindly bought this property. You lost it, unfortunately, to foreclosure a few years after, and you were out the game for a while. And then almost a decade later, you got back in and you tried your hand at it again. And you know, you went from flipping a few properties a year to now 40, 50 to, you know, a real estate company to a buy and hold portfolio to now educating the masses. And I really think it's a testament to just not giving up, you know, like you've been through a lot, you know, and we touched on a little bit of it today. Yeah. And you just kept fighting. So I think for me, the biggest takeaway from this episode is you just got to keep fighting. You never know when your day and your time is going to come. And, you know, thankfully now you are you're seeing the fruits of all of that. So, man, it's just been an amazing interview. I really appreciate you sharing and being so transparent with your story today.
Appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Definitely. Definitely. So is there anything you want to leave with the listeners? Any words, anything you want to drive home? Before we wrap,
I always end most of my videos. I always tell people most of my videos, there's nothing special about me other than my uniqueness as far as a human being. Aside from that, my intelligence is most of you, of your listeners, probably a lot smarter than me. But the one thing that I don't do is I don't give up, and I don't wait for no one to validate me and my dreams and my goals. And then I always tell people, if I could do it, you could do it too. And I want to see us all at the top, man. It's a lot more funner with more of us at the top together than being alone and reaping the benefits of all the hard work, man. So if I could do it, you guys could definitely do it too. And let's just get to work.
Definitely, definitely appreciate that. And also let the people know where they can follow you, where they can find all your resources as well.
My handle name on all social media platforms is @mybest197, @mybest197. And for the people that are possibly will ask about my online course or even how to get to me for consults and everything, if you go to my Instagram, you click the link in my bio, everything in the bio is going to be there on my link tree, and it'll have all the links to the courses, the online books, and everything else like that. And if you also want to get in contact with me directly.
Definitely. Well, thank you again. Really appreciate you jumping on the show. Looking forward to putting this out. And also thank you to everyone for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Again, if you haven't already, please subscribe and leave us a rating and review. It'll help us a lot. And if you want to join our real estate community, click the link in the show notes or go to blackrealestatedialogue.com and you can find all the information we have there. Thank you all so much. I look forward to hearing from you all soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram @BlackRealEstateDialogue and on Twitter @BreadPodcast. That's BRED Podcast. Until next time.